Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com. My home is not on this
earth, not in this world. Well, today we're going to be looking at Exodus 31 to 13:16. The book of Exodus has 40 chapters, and today we are hitting the leaving of Egypt. But crazy enough, there are still 27 chapters to go. You think they'd get to the Exodus and that would be the end, but no. There's a lot more life before they get to that promised land. In fact, spoiler alert, Moses doesn't actually get to go. But today we do see him walk out with the people of God into freedom from slavery of Pharaoh and the Egyptians. Actually, so much has happened so far as we've journeyed through these 12 chapters of the Israelites' lives in Egypt. We've seen Moses' salvation and then his rebellion, the Israelites' pain and Moses' return to Egypt, Pharaoh's stubbornness, 10 horrible plagues, and now we get to the part we've all been waiting for. The Exodus, which literally means a mass departure of people. There you go. So let's read the passage and see what happens in these verses. So it should be up there. It's a bit smaller than I was expecting, but you know, I'm going to go for it. Okay. During the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, "Up, leave my people, you and the Israelites. Go worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks and herds of you as you have said, and go and also bless me." The Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country, for otherwise, they said, we will all die. So the people took their dough before the yeast was added and carried it on their shoulders in kneading troughs wrapped in clothing. The Israelites did as Moses instructed and asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and clothing. The Lord had made the Egyptians favorably disposed towards the people, and they gave them what they asked for. So they plundered the Egyptians. The Israelites journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth. There were about 600,000 men on foot, beside women and children. Many other people went up with them, and also large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds. With the dough the Israelites had brought from Egypt, they baked loaves of unleavened bread. The dough was without yeast because they had been driven out of Egypt and did not have time to prepare food for themselves. Now, the length of time the Israelite people lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of the 430 years, to the very day, all the Lord's divisions left Egypt, because the Lord kept vigil that night to bring them out of Egypt. On this night, all the Israelites are to keep vigil to honor the Lord for the generations to come. Next one. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "These are the regulations for the Passover meal. No foreigner may eat it. Any slave you have bought may eat it after you have circumcised him, but a temporary resident or hired worker may not eat it. It must be eaten inside the house. Take none of the meat outside the house. Do not break any of the bones. The whole community of Israel must celebrate it. A foreigner residing among you who wants to celebrate the Lord's Passover must have all the males in his household circumcised. Then he may take part in one like one born in the land. No uncircumcised male may eat it. The same law applies both to the native born and to the foreigner residing among you." All the Israelites did just what the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron. And on that very day, the Lord brought the Israelites out of Egypt by their division. Next page. The Lord said to Moses, "Consecrate to me every firstborn male. The first offspring of every womb among the Israelites belongs to me, whether human or animal." Then Moses said to the people, "Commemorate this day, the day you came out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery, because the Lord brought you out of it with a mighty hand. Eat nothing containing yeast. Today, in the month of Aviv, you are leaving. When the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, the land he swore to your ancestors to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, you are to observe this ceremony in this month. For 7 days, eat bread without yeast, and on the seventh day, hold a festival to the Lord. Eat unleavened bread, during those 7 days, nothing with yeast in it is to be seen among you, nor shall any yeast be seen anywhere within your borders. On that day, tell your son, I do this because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt. This observance will be for you like a sign on your hand and a reminder on your forehead that this law of the Lord is to be on your lips. For the Lord brought you out of Egypt with his mighty hand. You must keep this ordinance at the appointed time year after year. After the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites and gives it to you, as he promised on oath to you and your ancestors, you are to give over to the Lord the first offspring of every womb. All the firstborn males of your livestock belong to the Lord. Redeem with a lamb every firstborn donkey, and if you do not redeem it, break its neck. Redeem every firstborn among your sons. In the days to come, when your sons ask you, what does this mean? Say to him, with a mighty hand, the Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. When Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, the Lord killed the firstborn of both people and animals in Egypt. This is why I sacrifice to the Lord the first male offspring of every womb and redeem each of my firstborn sons. And it will be like a sign on your hand and a symbol on your forehead that the Lord brought us out of Egypt with his mighty hand. There we go. That is Exodus 12, 31, 2, 13, 16. So today I'm going to be looking at 3 points. It's on the next one. We're going to be looking at look at what the Lord has done or what he did, remember and consecrate or dedicate yourself to him. So first point, look at what God did or has done. Last week we looked at the Passover, the coming of the final plague and the death of the firstborn sons. And now in verse 31, Pharaoh cries out and tells the Israelites to leave. Verse 31, during the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, up, leave my people, you and the Israelites. Go worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks and your herds as you said and go. And also bless me. The cries can be heard throughout the city as the firstborn sons are found dead and the reality of God's power is realized. As God has promised, he has heard the plea of his people. And now at the end of these horrible plagues, Israel are free to go. They finally listened. To walk out the front door of the Egyptian captivity into the sun with jewels, their families and their flocks. Can you imagine what that would feel like? They are free. Look what God has done. And this is incredibly important and significant moment. I mean, the last 12 chapters has been leading up to this moment and finally they walk out. They are free. But I think that actually you and I will probably struggle to fully understand what it might have been like for these people to be so oppressed, hated and beaten. I don't imagine, I actually really hope that none of us in this room have been or experienced the realities of slavery. I really hope not. These people have been trapped, they've been worked to the bone and they've been beaten. They're not a people who are having a little whine to God. This life has been hard and full of misery under an oppressive dictator. And yet in God's kindness, they've still grown in number. And now they are a free people. If you put up the next picture, this is from the Prince of Egypt. They're walking out with their heads high. No shame. They're not hiding. They are free and they are walking out the front door, not the side door. Not the back door. They walk out the front door of Egypt. The reality wonderfully is that after all this time, they are free because God has brought them out. And it says he keeps a vigil watching over them. He watches over them as they leave the city. The relief of the people as they walk out the city gates, away from the life of slavery and shackles, away from being beaten and oppressed, out towards freedom and the promised land, must have been something just spectacular. They were free, free from hard labor, free from their beatings, and most importantly, they're free to go worship God. Look at what God has done. the first part of this passage really is the climax of the first few chapters, but only gets a few verses. But the reality is wonderful. Look at what God has done. Now, has anybody seen The Prince of Egypt? Yeah? Yeah. So I actually only saw it recently for the first time and absolutely loved it. Whatever you think in with it, keeping its storyline of Exodus, I actually thought it was the most beautiful and amazing depiction of the first 14 chapters of Exodus. And I actually wanted to show you the scene, the whole scene when they leave Egypt, and I cried when I watched it yesterday. But it's 5 minutes, and actually it would take too much time out of my talk. So, but if you go on to the next one, there is this beautiful, beautiful moment when they're singing this song, If You Believe, and the little girl starts singing in Hebrew. And she, I'm not going to sing it in in Hebrew. But the lyrics she is singing are so glorious. I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. Who is like you, O Lord, among the celestials? Who is like you, majestic in holiness? In your love, you lead the people you redeemed. In your love, you lead the people you redeemed. I will sing, I will sing, I will sing. And she sings this, and then the people join in, and it becomes this beautiful chorus that is sung. And if you watch it and don't cry, then I don't know who you are. These verses are actually taken from passages in Exodus. And yeah, as I said, I just wept as I listened to it. Here are a people who are being led as lost, broken, and beaten sheep by the Lord, not beaten by the Lord, but they are being led by the Lord out of this barren land to a land of plenty. These are the words and prayers of a people freed, a people delighting and full of relief and wonder as they walk through the front door into freedom. Look what God has done. So the second point is remember. Chapter 12 goes through with great detail what the Passover is meant to look like and how they are to remember what God has done. But in this passage is more about who can join in. The Passover is what they did as they left and is to be a yearly ritual as they walk the desert to remind them where they've come from, what God has done and what they were saved from. I'm not sure if you guys know this, but my mum's side of the family is Jewish, which actually makes me Jewish. We have for many years now celebrated Passover or the Seder meal with family in London or at home together. And although my family are very liberal, I mean very liberal, they treasure this meal. They treasure how it brings the family together, the South African side, the English side. And its significance is, and they love how it is significant in remembering part of our Jewish history and how it unites us. Passover is a ritual that God gives to his people to hold on to repeat, to delight in, and to hold for his glory. One of my favourite parts of the Passover meal is the plate. I think I've got a picture of it. So this is like what it actually looks like, but this is a kid's version of it. And they're a bit blurry, so you can't totally see. But it's wonderful because if you can see, basically each part, each different circle, like has a different piece of food on it. And basically what you do is you eat a bit and then you tell some of the story and then you go on to the next bit and you tell some more of the story. I just love that. I love that every piece of food in the Passover meal represents of sharing the story of repetition and ritual. And guys, there's no mistake in this. God knows us and knows that this is not just helpful, but that ritual helps us have truth ingrained into our beings. This is something we know that the Israelites needed later as they were walking through the desert. We know they needed it. And guys, they did not do it. Remembering is part of who we are as humans. We often remember the bad as it is sometimes more deeply etched into our souls. But I think there is something right and there is something beautiful about telling our stories of wonder and of delight, remembering scripture and recalling moments where God has blessed you. I actually think one of the reasons that our culture is so obsessed with taking photos is because we want to remember. We don't want to forget. We actually joke that if a relationship or a big moment isn't on Facebook, that it hasn't happened. But the reality is that we are a people who love to remember, and God knows that. There is nothing more precious than recounting a summer holiday with family or listening to grandparents about their experiences of the war or growing up. There is something beautiful and amazing about hearing people's stories as they recount meeting Jesus or understanding grace. But there is something even more special about anniversaries that we celebrate every year. Maybe our birthdays, maybe our wedding anniversaries, maybe days when we mourn a loved one and we tell stories, oh, that story about them over and over. Every year, the same story. Remember a moment every year on the same date. It's funny because we get annoyed about Christmas and Easter being so commercialized. But actually, isn't it amazing that into the very makeup of our calendar, we get to every year retell the story of what God has done for us? And this also works daily, our daily disciplines, our weekly disciplines, making time especially to remember and treasure. And this is what Passover is all about, remembering what God has done and treasuring him. The Passover is a ritual in which the Israelites are to remember, and God starts it before they've even left, the first one being the very night they leave Egypt. And it's interesting in our passage about boundaries and restriction God's put on this festival. However, I think actually as you read, if you are willing to join in and you want to, you're welcome. The reality was not only the Israelites people left in Egypt. It does say in the passage, actually others came with them. And there would have been lots of other people that would have joined them that wouldn't have considered them part of the Israelite people. And verses 43 to 49 give those people a way to be part of the Israelite people and dedicate themselves to God, to graft into the people. And it says, be born as one in the land, be part of his chosen people. The Passover was a moment of freedom for all who left with Moses, and for those who wanted to belong to Yahweh. They're all welcome. Welcome in, welcome out, and welcome to remember. The other wonderful thing about this remembering is the communal remembering. You are to welcome people into your home, and the whole community is to enjoy it. We as a family traveled to London. I didn't do it this year, but my family did, to my cousins to enjoy the meal. They would have sat together in their tents, the Israelites, remembering and delighting in what God has done. One commentator, I think, yeah, if you go on a bit and then we'll come back to that. Go on, next one. Great. One commentator says, repetition and familiarity work. What is repeated becomes familiar and becomes part of us. True, when we repeat things over and over, they can seem to become dead. But on the contrary, ritual has always been and will always be a means of securing for future generations the power and the reality of the gospel. And this is why we do communion each week, remembering and delighting at what Jesus has done on the cross. And I think this is interesting when we think about what we're in the habit of and what are our rituals. What are we celebrating and treasuring in our daily, weekly and yearly habits? And it's just something to think about. And I definitely feel challenged about what I am doing over and over. One thing that I thought might be quite fun is, in the Passover, if you go back a couple of slides. Oh, yeah, great. In the Passover meal, there's four children who ask questions. One is the wise. Let me just check. One is the wise, one is the foolish, and one doesn't know how to ask questions. Wise, wicked, foolish, and one doesn't know how to ask questions. I thought what I would do is I would ask the questions. I've grown up kind of asking these questions, and you can answer them to me. And it's all about why this you do this ritual. So your words are in yellow, and my questions are in white. Okay? So as a child, I asked these questions. So on all nights, we need not to dip even once, but on this night, we do so twice. So you say, slavery, the salt water into which we dip the karpas represents the tears we cried while in Egypt. Similarly, the charoset into which the bitter herbs are dipped reminds us of the cement we used to create the bricks in Egypt. Freedom. Dipping foods is considered a luxury, a sign of freedom, as opposed to the poor or enslaved who eat dry and undipped foods. Great. On all nights we eat shametz or matzah, but on this night only matzah. Slavery. Matzah was the bread of slaves and poor. It was cheap to produce and easy to make. Freedom. Matzah also commemorates the fact that the bread did not have enough time to rise. The Jews hastily left Egypt. Great, next page. Great. On all nights, we eat any kind of vegetables. But on this night, maror, slavery. The maror, or bitter herbs, remind us of the bitterness of slavery in Egypt. On all nights, we eat sitting upright or reclining. But on this night, we all recline. Freedom. We commemorate our freedom by reclining on cushions like royalty. And the next one. So this is the question from the wise child. What are the testimonies, statutes, and ordinances which the Lord our God has commanded us to do? With a mighty fist has the Lord rescued us from the bondage of Egypt. As a child, a Jewish child, you grow up every year saying that over and over and over. It's wonderful because as you ask the questions, they repeat the truths to you. I've grown up hearing those truths. And before I was a Christian, I didn't really understand them. But now I get to see the fullness of them, and it's wonderful. Great. So next point, if you go on, is consecrate yourself. The Lord said to Moses, consecrate to me every firstborn male. The first offspring of every womb among the Israelites belongs to me, whether human or animal. Chapter 13 starts with God saying to Israelites, consecrate to me every firstborn male. But then goes on to say, they belong to me. Consecrate to me means to make or declare something sacred or dedicate it formally for a religious purpose. And I think it's interesting that God says, make, declare, dedicate to me your firstborn sons as they belong to me. Because we all know, and God has definitely shown, that his power, he's powerful enough to give or take. So why does he then say to them, well, why does he not just say to them, I make all these things sacred because they're mine? I think God has brought the Israelites out of Egypt, given them this festival to remember his goodness, and now says, consecrate yourselves to me, dedicate these things to me. As we see throughout the Bible story, God's message over and over again is all about his loving relationship towards us and our tumultuous relationship with him. And this is the whole message of the good news of Jesus. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. See, love without choice is not love. And so God, although the rightful owner of not just the firstborn of all the Israelites, people and animal and all creation, says to the Israelites, dedicate your firstborn precious son to me out of love and out of choice. It is out of relationship that he says, give these things to me as a sign of your commitment and dedication to me. This is what he's talking about with the circumcision and Passover also. It's all about dedicating yourself to him. And why God gives clear boundaries about who can join in or cannot join in with Passover is all about that relationship. It's not to exclude, but it's actually to include and take our dedication seriously. It is a choosing and setting yourself apart for the sake of God. As he has chosen them, they have the choice to choose him, his relationship, and all that God is, to be part of his chosen people. And if they do so, they get all the blessings of joining in with Passover and being and knowing him. The reality is choice, a choice to dedicate, to consecrate, and to set yourself apart from God. It can seem costly what he's asking, but the reality is there is a cost. God says to the Israelites to consecrate themselves, to be circumcised, and remember, not because he's mean, but because of how he himself has given himself to them and freed them. I was doing a talk the other week and I said, God literally lays down all his cards. If you were on a date, you wouldn't have to work out if he liked you or not. You'd know. The cost of true freedom is always death. To cover the Israelites, to cover us, the penalty had to be paid. For the Israelites, it was the firstborn lamb whose blood was on the door. One death for another's life. The cost is high, but freedom is greater. And ultimately, we know that on the cross, once and for all, the great lamb was slain. The sacrifice made once and for all. His death so that you can have life. And therefore, God says, consecrate yourself to me. Look what I've done for you. I love you. Dedicate yourselves to me. I could just say to you, no, those firstborn sons and animals, they're mine. But he wants there to be a choice. The cost was his, sons laid down, life laid down once and for all. The animals, the lambs for the Israelites. The reality is freedom to choose, but the cost of that freedom is death. Our journey, as the Israelites was, is a journey of freedom to choose God, daily failing him, but freedom to choose. From Adam and Eve, we have struggled with our inturned hearts and we've turned away from our Creator. And he says, dedicate yourself to me as I have dedicated myself to you. He's our Father and our King. And instead, we turn towards our own selves, our own gain, and our own little bubble of self-reliance. The journey we are ultimately called to is a life of surrender to God. His leading, his love, his freedom, the same as the Israelites. Look at what God has done. Remember and dedicate your heart, your work, your family, your children, your relationships, your income, your holidays, your very self to him, for him. Let him lead you and bless you. Let him lead you into freedom. Surrender your weakness to him and let him lead you in life as the great shepherd we see him to be. At the moment, Mike and I are going through a lot of change. Mike has decided to step out of teaching after 4 years and we're in the process of buying a house, as well as a few other things going on in life. It's been an interesting year as we've traveled through these seasons and tried to work out what on earth to do about all the different things going on. But actually, if I'm totally honest, the biggest challenge hasn't been that there's all these different things going on. The biggest challenge for me has been daily looking at what God has done, remembering and dedicating myself to him, surrendering my heart, my hopes, my dreams, my frustrations to God, saying to God in every step of this process, I am going to trust you. I give you our home, our jobs. I'm not going to just choose the easy option or the comfortable option because I want it. No, I'm going to trust you, God. We are going to trust you with where we live and to provide our income as we move into this new home, whether it looks stable or not, whether family or friends think we're crazy or not. We will openly trust you, God. We will dedicate ourselves to you. As you have shown in your word, Lord, in your life and time again, who you are and how much you love us, we will choose to lay down our lives for your sake and be dedicated to you, God, not our own gain. God says to the Israelites, you will be my people and I will be your God. Give me what is mine and dedicate to me your firstborn. The ones who have the inheritance are to be the legacy and to lead the family in where it goes. Now in Jesus, we have God dwelling within us. And he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. The journey now, as it was for the Israelites, was daily surrender to God. And we fail daily, but God's grace is abundant. So, chapter 12, 31 to 13, 16, we find ourselves with our precious Israelites, having left Egypt and its slavery. With much turmoil ahead, we know Exodus doesn't stop at chapter 13, but with life and with freedom because of what God has done. God calls them to remember yearly, to create a ritual so it will be ingrained within them to remember these truths, remember what he has done. And he says, consecrate yourselves to me. Give me your heart, your lives, and yourselves. So I think the best thing we can do now, as we have looked at what God has done, is to remember the ultimate sacrifice given for us on the cross. Jesus' blood shed for you and me, his body broken and his death, so that you and I could know freedom out of whatever our Egypt is, and life. And let us come and dedicate ourselves to him. Maybe you know at the moment you're choosing your own gain over laying down and surrendering to God. Why not take a moment after you remember what God has done for you to come before God and dedicate yourself, consecrate yourself once again to him. Look at what he's done. Isn't it wonderful? Remember, he knows it's good for you to remember, and consecrate yourself to him. Give yourself to him again.